Good evening, and we'll call this meeting of the Amesburg Council to order, of course. I'd ask at this time that we would all stand, and Brenda will open up with a word of prayer.
O Lord, our heavenly Father, teach us to put to good account whatever talents thou hast lent us, to discuss with patience and zeal municipal affairs which have come before us this day, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. Let me welcome everyone here this evening, and first to counsel, if anyone any conflicts of interest they wish to declare at this time as it relates to this public meeting. Councilor Sutton, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a pecuniary interest with item 23.2.
It's been so noted, and could you state your reasons for your input, please?
Being the executive director of the Hushmallam Youth Center, I think it would be apropos for me to refrain from any voting on that topic.
Thank you. Anyone else? If not, that'll be reflected in the minutes. And of course, if during the course of this meeting one finds himself in conflict, notification to the chair will get it entered into the minutes as such. I bring this to our previous minutes that were held with council pleasure relative to previous minutes. Deputy Mayor Southern.
I move the approval of the previous minutes as required.
It's been moved by Councilors. Deputy Mayor Sutherland, there is support. Councilor Puget supports that, and those are the minutes of March the 5th. At the public and the in-camera meeting. Any discussions, any comments, concerns, errors, or omissions? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is then carried. Would you please?
Our first presentation, Ann Rhoda, Manager of Tourism and Culture, presenting information on a Diamond Jubilee.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council, and thank you for allowing me to present to you what the Diamond Jubilee means to the town of Amesburg and the celebration itinerary
just
for that
day. Before
you
go any farther, I'm sorry to interrupt. We didn't want to start this meeting until Wes is here, but Wes is here now?
Brady.
Yeah,
that's Brady.
That's Brady.
Well, better looking one.
Okay, Brady. We'll start it now that Brady's here.
Yes, good. That's important. So, I just want to read a message from the Minister of the Ministry of Canadian Heritage, Minister James Moore. 2012 marks the 60th anniversary of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II's ascendation to the throne as Queen of Canada. This Diamond Jubilee year is an opportunity to honor the Queen's extraordinary dedication and service to Canada and to celebrate our country's many achievements during Her Majesty's reign. So that really is the genesis of the Diamond Jubilee. The Diamond Jubilee coincides with the annual garden tour and fair on Sunday, May 27th in the King's Navy Yard Park. Through the Ministry of Canadian Heritage and Official Languages, Amesburg was awarded $19,600 for the project. There are some significant national components to the Jubilee. The first and foremost is the service awards. In Great Britain, the Queen is known for every year going out, reaching out to the community and calling for nominations for people who have served their community as the Queen does. So nevertheless, we are doing the same with our own community volunteers. I'm sure you received the letter that will be going out to our nonprofit organizations nominating one of their volunteers. So that will be a big component of the Jubilee. And of course, community pride goes along with the volunteers. And we have many, many volunteers. In fact, it was very difficult to choose pictures because We have a phenomenal group of volunteers in Emmitsburg. Also, another popular component of the Jubilee, and again every year in Great Britain, is an activity known as the Royal Variety Performance. So this is when the Queen and the royal family invite usually an artist, someone like Elton John, Lady Gaga, actually Justin Bieber, Canada's own, have been invited to be part of the Royal Variety Performance. So it is a gala evening held annually in the United Kingdom. Well, we're going to have our very own Royal Variety Performance. Now, of course, we couldn't afford at $19,000 the real Elton John, but we will definitely do our best with tribute to Elton John and Beatlemania, all things United Kingdom. To give you a little sort of sneak preview on the itinerary, the event will start off at 1:30 in the afternoon with the Windsor Junior Symphony opening the reception in King's Navy Yard Park at 2 o'clock, and I think you all received invitations. I'm hoping to see as many councillors and of course mayor there to present our volunteers with their medals, the Diamond Jubilee Volunteer Medal presentation. And of course, there would be no party without high tea and cake and a children's area for crafts and learning about the Queen through the Learning Center. And then 4 o'clock, both free performances by the Elton John Tribute Band, and at 5 o'clock, Beatlemania. And I am told they look, sound and smell like the Beatles. So I think it will be a pretty amazing afternoon in the town of Emmitsburg. What are the results? Of course, festivals and events build communities. Canadians learn about the role of the monarchy. Emmitsburg has amazing and unique assets. We strive to provide quality, thoughtful presentations that align with our strategic plan and the Ministry of Heritage's objectives, and to deliver interesting and memorable experiences for our residents and visitors, that Emmitsburg is a cultural community and full of awesomeness. So that's what I can tell you about the Diamond Jubilee, and I think it will be another wonderful addition to the roster of our events, and in particular to the Garden Tour and Fair. And the Garden Tour and Fair Committee are just ecstatic to be able to present this as part of their offering that weekend.
Thank you very much for that information as it relates to the Diamond Jubilee. And are there any questions of council at this time? If not, you entertain a motion to receive the presentation. Councillor Pilon, supported by...
Motion to receive.
Councillor Davies. If any discussion, hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, it's carried. Your next presentation, please, with respect to Bicentennial. Wes, I just want you to know that Brady's better looking, so you can have a seat.
And Your Worship and members of council, I would like to present, if I'm sure many of you already know, Sarah Van Grinsen. She is the 1812 project coordinator, so we will be doing the presentation together. Well, it's been a busy 4 years, but with the support of council, our volunteers, sponsors, and many stakeholders, I think we are ready to unveil a thoughtful, inclusive 1812 commemoration hosted in the historic town of Emmitsburg. This report will demonstrate how we are using the bicentennial as a canvas for cultural activity in our community, and specifically through the arts. It's important to highlight where the support has come from and the level of commitment from our partners. how many of the partners recognize the War of 1812 project as a community building package. Of course, through the Ontario Trillium Foundation, the Provincial Marine Monument, and the interactive outdoor kiosks have been built, and the monument will be unveiled in August through the Roots to Boots Festival. Through the Ministry of Canadian Heritage, it was recognized that festival and events in Ontario accounts for $21 billion in tourism receipts. That's everything from accommodations, food, gas, event tickets, and service-related products. We definitely want to be in the game for a portion of that. Other businesses and corporations have directly funded and endorsed the Roots to Boots Bicentennial Weekend. To date, we have collected $343,000 through the particular businesses and ministries that you see on the screen as of date. Media sponsorship buys and in-kind for upcoming events. You see before you the different media and magazines, radio, newspapers, television that have also come on board as sponsors. There we have estimated $160,000 of in-kind media support that has definitely exceeded our expectations, and 5 million impressions. Now, by impressions, that means how many free ads, articles, mentions, airtime, and how many eyeballs have read and began to understand about the bicentennial in Amherstburg to date. So 5 million impressions, and that is all free advertising. Much in-kind donations from local businesses to rental of the golf carts, materials, food, buses, another $38,000 has been recorded in in-kind donations, and we can never forget about that. So the grand total investment for 1812 initiatives for the town of Amherstburg is $541,000. That's over $500,000 in total investment for 1812 initiatives. Definitely adding value in our community. Not only has the project built equity in the dollar value from our partners, but the inclusive nature of the event allows our stakeholders to participate in a meaningful way. The grants and sponsorship allowed for the employment and services of 56 providers, from musicians, to graphic designers, to event product rental agencies. We have registered 130 volunteers at 1,500 hours. 18 local nonprofit organizations are part of the Roots to Boots Festival, 11 local providers, and 3 non-local providers in contracted services. Now I'm going to hand over the exciting part to Sarah.
I get the fun job. We have been doing a lot of work on our website and Facebook and Twitter. We have a lot of followers. Our website is about to break 10,000 visits, so we're pretty excited about that. And the average person that comes to our website comes on for more than 3 minutes at a time, which, if you know, activity on websites is just, it's a pretty amazing amount of time. People aren't just clicking on and clicking off. People are very interested in what we're doing. And we follow the flow of traffic, so we see where everybody's going, and people are very interested in the events that are taking place in Amherstburg. And 30% of the people that visit are return visitors. So, as I said, they're very interested, and they're not just Canadians. There's visitors from Brazil and Australia, actually have pretty high numbers of visits. So we're anticipating a pretty international group that's going to be coming out here. And our Facebook, I hope everybody here has liked us on Facebook, because our Facebook page, we update on a daily basis, and we At this point, we have over 250 likes, but we are strategically putting messages out there each day. We're mixing the messages from informative history lessons about Amherstburg, which people really appreciate. They are writing back saying how much they appreciate all the information, and to all the fun events that will be taking place that coincide with all the 1812 events. And we're getting very positive feedback. As I said, people appreciate the information and they're sharing our stories. So it's not just going to our 250 likes, it's going all over the place. Our Twitter, we are gathering up our students to work on our Twitter account, and actually during the event, we will be having four volunteers on a regular basis tweeting about everything that's going on, and to intrigue people to come on out to the events right at that moment in time.
So, I know it's no secret that our Roots to Boots Festival is our main signature event for the commemoration. So, before you, you will see the schedule for August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And based on data, tracking requests, and comparative events, we estimate an approximate 50,000 people to be in Amherstburg that weekend. And I do want to add to Sarah's rendition of our social media, we also coincide that with Town of Amherstburg. So it's 1812 Alive, but also Town of Amherstburg on Facebook and Twitter. Sarah does that on a daily basis, so it's really boosting up our reach. We would like to highlight some of the significant high-level programming on opening night. Theater Intrigue will perform the premiere of Spirit of a Nation. This full-length musical production telling the story through theater and song will debut during Roots to Boots Festival. This particular piece was designed specifically for Roots to Boots, but is viewed as a contender for national and perhaps international acclaim. So we're very, very fortunate and proud to have that as part of the lineup.
We will have three stages set up during the festival, and the one that I'm speaking on, the Reynolds stage, is going to be situated in Navy Yard Park. And the Reynolds lived in Amherstburg in the 1800s, a well-known landscape artist. Catherine, as well as her sister Margaret, became known as Detroit's first native artist. Her most famous watercolors include View of Amherstburg, which is right in the middle of there. I'm sure everyone has seen that there, which is a portrait of Bellevue property. And in this portrait, she depicts General Proctor with Chief Tecumseh in the lower right corner. 30 of Catherine Reynolds' watercolors are currently on display at various museums within Canada. The art exhibit, Destiny Art Exhibit, will be situated near Navy Yard Park as well, and we have we are doing a jury exhibit, so we are going to have art of that's 1812 inspired, but it will be juried, so it's going to be of high quality, and it's going to bring in the artistic crowd who are very much into seeing all of that. And we've already, the application went out to artists, and we've already gotten a lot of response. The Mud Puppet Gallery, as well as Gibson Gallery, are working on that. The Emmerich Pavilion, the extra exciting area as far as I'm concerned, being a mother of two. It had the emphasis on how life was like in the 1800s. From both a soldier's and First Nations perspective, the entire area at Toddy Jones Park will include arts and crafts for children. There will be musical performances, plays, and storytelling. The Essex County Library will be coming out to do a presentation called 1812. It's not just a number. And there'll be cooking demonstrations, a boot camp for kids, an equestrian area that will be run by Sarah Park's horsemanship, and we will be having costumes for the children while they're having their free pony rides, and they will also have pictures taken with an 1812 background, so that'll be pretty exciting for them. There will be weaving and beading, candle making. A lot of this will be done by the Native Women's Group of Windsor. We're also going to have a toy company out that makes toys of 1812 and teaches people how to play games of that time. We also have the whole area is going to be very interactive, but one of the major interactive areas we will have is a large mural. It's going to be 20 feet long, and it's going to be illustrated pictures of Amherstburg of that time, so everybody can go up and paint on this big mural. So that'll be very exciting and fun for the families. And we're going to have dancing there as well of the 1812 period being done by the Cat's Meow.
Of course, everyone knows the popularity of tall ships. A significant sponsor, the Windsor Star, has come on board, presenting the St. Lawrence II tall ship. It will be docked at King's Navy Yard Park, offering free public tours, and with our partners, the Provincial Marine, an all-out cannon-blaring, gun-smoking reenactment of the capture of the Cuyahoga will take place on Sunday afternoon at the mouth of Lake Erie. Another major attraction is a live concert from Chantal Kraviazic at Fort Malden. A Canadian icon, songwriter, singer, Chantal has deep Aboriginal roots and will draw a significant crowd to Amherstburg and is the perfect fit. By providing a venue to area businesses with a three-day, every-hour, on-the-hour itinerary, we can only speculate that the area restaurants will be very busy. We need to feed over 50,000 people for 3 days, including hundreds of volunteers, reenactors, artists, musicians, and a VIP reception for dignitaries and sponsors. Tavern on the River will act as an innovative supplement to offset the number of tourists with a simple themed menu and music. Amherstburg Chamber of Commerce and members will operate this portion of the event. So, we don't just do this for nothing. Definitely, festivals and events stimulate our economy, but what are the real results that we want to leave behind after 2012? Of course, that the majority of Canadians will recognize the War of 1812 as a defining moment in the history of our nation, that residents and visitors will continue to participate in key events, recognizing that the town of Amherstburg was a major player and contributor to the outcome of the War of 1812, which led to Canada's freedom and independence. It's definitely stimulus in our economic development, and I want to just take that a little further. What we're looking at here is not only direct impact on hotels and restaurants, but our peripheral businesses as well. A new coat of paint, new clothing, costumes, retailers are busier. Family parties and picnics. Genealogy is a big part of the program. We can be certain that the spin-off will be substantial and significant. Of course, our legacy investments and infrastructure improvements to our cultural assets, as we know, the Provincial Marine Monument and another peace sculpture will be unveiled by Amherstburg Chamber of Commerce and the Amherstburg Rotary Club, fostering capacity and sustainability to our historic sites and attractions. This type of support and forum to our nonprofit organizations and culture groups does build that capacity. And I do believe, as it is now, King's Navy Yard Park will definitely be the most photographed park in Ontario. I truly believe that. In the end, the people that will come to Amherstburg, they will tell their families and friends what a great place Amherstburg is and come back year after year. We want people to know that Amherstburg is a great place to invest, to retain, to sustain, and we are open for business. That is the bottom line. So we're available and open to any questions that you might have. Thank you so much
for that presentation. And any questions? Council at this time, Councilor Dion, Councilor Sutton.
Well, it really doesn't leave much room for questions. As you can see, they covered it well, and
Councilor
I, myself, I really appreciate it. I'll make a motion to receive this.
Thank you.
Motion to receive by Councilor Pilon, supported by Councilor Fouché. Discussion, Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It is going to be a great weekend, obviously. There are great things going on, and a lot of work to get that number of sponsors and that level of grant support as well. My only question is more being proactive and looking at the Tavern on the Green and wondering if that's been publicized to the local restaurants and what their feedback has been. I know when we went through the process with the UCCU, one of the things we heard loud and clear from local businesses was don't compete with us. And so, you alluded to it. I believe your words were as kind of a support to catch the overflow. So I'm just wondering if they're on board with that, if everything's great, and if there's any opportunity for them perhaps to even participate to some level.
Yes, and I'm so glad you asked that question, Mr. Mayor, through to you, to Councillor Sutton. We have held numerous public meetings, and their concerns were definitely voiced. We took them back, heard them. You have to understand that 50,000 people is a lot of people over the 3 days. If Tavern facilitates just 1,000 of those people, that is 2%, you can imagine. Most restaurants we have pulled can hold between 90 to 120 people at a time, three times a day. In fact, and I'll be completely honest here, my gut feeling tells me that's still not enough for the people coming. They will be busy. And again, it's just a supplement. We heard loud and clear, do not compete with us. Make those prices the same across the board so it's not a discounted menu or whatnot. And that is definitely how it's going to be. I think there will be enough business to go around six times a day each day. In fact, we won't have enough. And we don't want to send them to Windsor. We want them to spend their money here in Amherstburg.
Councillor,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. A similar question is, and I can see that we also don't want people to be going hungry because they can't get into those restaurants, which would be, at one level, a good problem, but a problem that could be distressing for families who may not be able to get in on a timely fashion. But again, with logistics, with traffic, with having people going from A to B, I saw the golf cart thing, but can you go a little bit more detail about how people are going to be able to move from parking lots into the main area, and also accommodation? What's our strategy for accommodation?
Okay, well, through to you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Davies. Parking was a big component of the planning. So right now we have contracted with Windsor Transit, three buses, three times a day, with a stop at, we're in negotiations right now with the Windsor Raceway to use that as a parking destination for people from Windsor and from LaSalle. So Windsor Transit will stop there, pick up people, come to Amherstburg and park in the depot there at General Amherst High School. From the other end, again, contracted services through Sharp Bus Lines, also a partner with the festival, will be stopping at the old Boblo docks next to the old Boblo dock parking lot next to Seasons. So another area of parking there. So we will have six buses continuously going around from Windsor and the county into Amherstburg.
Councilor Fouché.
Oh, and Devonshire Mall. Sorry, Sarah just reminded me. Thank you.
And accommodations.
Accommodations, I do believe most of the B&Bs, through to you, Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry, to Councilor Davies. I know that most of the B&Bs have had bookings already. The overspill, we have made some packages with Caesars, Windsor, and the Holiday Inn Select on here in line.
Any billeting? I heard that before, that there might be some billeting.
Through to you, Mr. Mayor, to Councillor Davies. We did do a little bit of research on that, but the feasibility of that and also the maintenance of that with insurance and monitoring was something that we felt was a little overwhelming for our office.
I think this is a prime example of these are the type of events that's going to attract those investors that said it's time for us to really look at Emmitsburg as a destination place and as such bring in that hotel that can accommodate those particular individuals. Councilor Pucci.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. Through you to Ann. Ann, you mentioned the parking, the old Boblo parking lot. Is that viable? Because I know it just seems like it's totally overgrown right at this time.
Yes, through to you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Pouget. In talking with the owner, Mr. Amicone, the only thing he did, of course, the exact same thing that you're saying is we would have to look at, and I would like to talk to my director, have a meeting with him about cutting the grass prior. Yes.
But that's not a big issue. We can get through our department to make sure that's done. That's not going to be an issue. Councilor Pouget.
Thank you. That's a follow-up. And I know you must have already done this. The security is all in place with the Amherstburg Police Department to have that number of people to come into town. And also porta-johns and everything have been ordered for. Because, you know, you have to think about it. And I know you have already. But
through to you, Mr. Mayor, to Councilor Pouget. Yes, the porta-johns. We have ordered extra porta-johns for Toddy Jones Park, near the Navy Yard and near the tall ships over and above what we already have here in Emmitsburg. And for the security, we are in negotiations with Emmitsburg Police to see about scheduling any costs, but also we have contracted the commissioners for extra security. Thank you.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried, and let me thank you for the presentation. And certainly, I'll just take a moment to say that it's events such as this, and to you and your staff, for all your volunteers that work so hard, it pays a tremendous, brings a lot of value to our community, pays a tremendous benefit to you, and we certainly are pleased with what you're doing, because Amherstburg, we've always said we want to lead, we don't want to follow, and these events, people look forward to these events, and they're just an outstanding moment in the time in our community. And I know that you've got all of the things that you've done. This isn't your first rodeo, I know that for sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your support, all of you. Thank you.
Just before we go to the next report, I'd ask for council's indulgence if we could. We've got a notice of motion that we're going to deal with this evening that Councillor Sutton brought forward as it relates to the Kingbridge Park and the naming of that park there after a friend of mine and a former member of this council, if we would allow that to be brought forward at this time. I'd introduce her, or I would certainly accept a motion in that regard. Councilor Sutton?
I so move we bring that item forward at this time.
Moved by Councilor Sutton, supported by Councilor Davies. With no further discussions, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried. Councilor Sutton, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce the following motion. Whereas the town of Amherstburg from time to time deems it appropriate to name municipal parks after individuals who have demonstrated an extraordinary level of community service, and whereas Pat Thrasher impacted the lives of countless youth through his dedication as a minor league sports coach and mentor, continued that devotion to youth recreation opportunities in his role as a municipal councillor, and was a key leader in the local multiple sclerosis society, therefore, be it resolved that Kingsbridge Park be named Pat Thrasher Park, and that the appropriate signage dedicating the park in his name be erected, and a ribbon cutting ceremony be held once the park is operational.
There is support for that. Councillor Piedmont supports that motion. Further discussion at this time? Councillor Sutton, followed by Councillor DePasquale.
Just very quickly, and I'm sure there's six members in the audience who can speak to Pat's legacy a lot more eloquently than I can, but Pat was one of my first baseball coaches, and as I shared with Wes, my skill level wasn't very good. And Pat, I have fond memories of him spending a lot of extra time after practices trying to teach me how to play the right game, and everything was always positive, you know. He'd hit a dribbler halfway back to the pitcher's mound, and he'd talk about what great contact it was. And I remember in the game when I actually got my first hit, I think he was more excited about it than I was. And as I shared with Wes, I did actually get better, thankfully, and I went on to become a minor league sports coach myself. And there were many times where I would think, you know, when I was dealing with kids, what would Pat do in this situation? How would he try, you know, to bring out the best in that kid, male or female, you know, in terms of helping them feel part of the team and playing the game the right way? And so he's an individual who, as you know, the legacy of his family will attest to, you know, always strive to do the right thing for Amherstburg. And if we as municipal councilors were half the man that he was, the community would be well served.
On the motion, Councilor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to put a couple of words in. I went to school, we went to grade school together, Pat and I, and as I remember, bless his soul, he was a character, and we had more fun as kids. And I think he deeply deserves to be remembered by this community for everything he's done. And also, I'd like to pay tribute to his whole family, all good people of this community.
Mm-hmm. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. And certainly, Pat, I sat on council with Pat, and of course, we used to convince each other all the time. Pat, of course, worked with his father and selling GM products, and I was working at Ford making the Ford products, so we had a lot of fun with each other kidding back and forth. But Pat has, as I always like to say, it's a love life last gift in remembrance, and this is the way that we can remember the contribution that Pat has made over the years by naming this facility after him. Next item.
That brings us to administrative reports. Item 14.1, under Development Services, Hunt Club Creek Subdivision, extension of draft plan approval.
On the report, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the move the report by Lori Bratt concur with the recommendation, and I have a question if I can support it.
They're supportive for that motion. Councilor Cougier supports that motion. Discussion at this time? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have when I was reading the whole report, and this through you to Lori, it said that there must be reasons for an extension, and I don't see a reason anywhere in the whole preamble of the documents that are here. Do you know what the reason is that they're asking for it? I'm sure it's not a big deal, but I just want to find out.
Go ahead, Lori. Would you respond to that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, Mr. Mayor, at the time that draft plan approval was given, I think we all recall there was a unique economic downturn, and therefore it didn't commence as quickly as what we had anticipated. Things are now starting to look up, and this extension will allow them to meet the conditions of draft plan approval and provide them with the time to continue with the subdivision.
Further discussion? Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Lori. Just further to what the Deputy Mayor has stated, Lori, in a letter from Mr. Bill King, it said a request for an extension should be made at least 60 days before the approval lapse, and that appears to be right on time. But it says the request should include the reasons why an extension is needed, as well as a resolution in support of the extension from the town of Amherstburg. And my fear is that if we approve this tonight, County Council could just send it back to us and ask for a reason in writing, because it doesn't just affect us, it affects both school boards. So I have no real problem with an extension, but I would prefer to get the reasons in writing so that we could send it on to the appropriate parties.
Please.
Mr. Mayor, the approval authority is Mr. King, and certainly we can explain in our correspondence to him as part of this process. So he's very familiar with these requests, and it's a matter of procedure that they are approved.
Okay. There's no further discussion on the motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 14.2, removal of Cart Lock Control, Riverfront Park Subdivision.
Councilor Sutton, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt of the report and that Council approve the request to extend the time frame specified in the bylaw. That Council approve the request to amend the plan described in the bylaw, and further that bylaw 2012-21 and bylaw 2010-35 be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
Support for that motion. Councilor Pedilon supports that motion. Discussion, if any, at this time. Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. Through you to Lori. Lori, I did try to go see you today. We just kept missing each other. Regarding this request, could you please explain the exact reason for it? Like, is it? Because I came back to that area and I did the walkthrough, but I'm not really sure of, would it be to close a road later, or what is the exact reason for that?
Maybe you can just bring Councilor up to speed on exactly what this is, which is a normal process that we go through, please.
Mr. Mayor, this is a normal process under the Planning Act, wherein essentially it enables the conveyance of single units for freehold units. For example, you have a townhome that's constructed on a block. Part lot control exemption allows each individual unit to be conveyed separately as a freehold unit, and then part lot control is put back on the property, and then you then can't divide that individual unit up into any further parcels. But what this allows them to do is to convey those individual units that's been built on that block.
Just okay, follow up?
As a follow up, so Lori, when you're talking about the townhouses side by side, that would just be one parcel of land that we're referring to?
For example, on Riverfront, a townhome is built on a block. You have four individual units, and each of those units, this enables each of those units to be held as freehold units. It allows them to sell them as individual units.
Further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion? Opposed, motion carried unanimously.
Removal of part lot control, four-man subdivision.
Again, with Council's pleasure. Councilor DeSquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the report from Lori Brad, dated March 9th, regarding the removal of part lot control form subdivision be received. Council approve the application for removal of part lot control for lots 4, 5, 7, 8, 11, 12, 16, 17. And further, that bylaw 2012-22 being a bylaw to remove certain lands from part lot control 12M198 be taken as having been read three times, finally passed, and the mayor be authorized to sign same there too.
Supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Discussions, if any, at this time? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Brings us to reports under engineering and infrastructure 15.1. Leo Bodwin Drain request for replacement of an existing culvert from Peter and Marguerite Dunn.
Councilor Puget.
The council received the report from Luz Arlinga dated March 6, 2012 regarding a request for replacement of existing culvert over the Leo Baudouin Municipal Drain, and that council accept the request from Peter and Margaret Dunn for the replacement of an existing culvert over the Leo Baudouin Municipal Drain as per Section 78 of the Drainage Act, and further that Crozier Bear Engineers be appointed for the purpose of preparing an engineer's report including plans and profile for the Leo Baudouin Municipal Drain.
There's support for that motion. Councilor Davies supports that motion. Discussion, if any? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion again is carried unanimously.
Item 15.2, 2012 surplus equipment to auction, designation of surplus equipment.
Councilor Peel.
Move the report from Luz Arlinga dated March 8th regarding surplus equipment in public works, and further that council approve the disposal of designated surplus equipment by way of auction.
There is support for that motion. Councilor DePasquale supports that motion. Discussions, if any? Deputy Mayor Sutherland, followed by Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Lou. When I looked at the various items to be auctioned off, Lou, I have no problem with any, but I just have a question. The excess street lights and poles and fixtures, could we not keep them and put them up somewhere where we need lighting, like say at Amherst Point or Edgewater or some such thing, or has that already been discussed?
Mr. Mayor, the streetlights that are identified for the auction sale were actually looked at, reviewed by my public works staff. I also had a local contractor that does a lot of the street lighting for the municipality to look at them also. And these were actually seconds. They wouldn't really be suitable for road use any further, but they do have value, maybe not even for street lighting, but for other purposes. The concrete posts could actually be short protection and other functions such as that. So that's why they have been put in the auction. They have been closely scrutinized and deemed not to be suitable for municipal purposes any longer.
Thank you.
Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question has been answered.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried again. Unanimous.
Reports under Treasury 17.1, pending assessment appeals, General Chemical.
And with Councilor Fletcher, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the report by Paul Beneteau, Treasurer, dated March 12, 2012, regarding General Chemical assessment appeals be received, and further that Council concur with the recommendation to accept the proposal as submitted by Schultz Douglas LLP, and further recommended by Municipal Tax Equity respecting the same, and further that the balance of $111,655 be transferred from the tax stabilization under this form to cover that loss.
There's support for that motion. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Further discussions, if any? Councillor Sutton, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, Paul, what's the status of our tax stabilization fund now with we take out that $111,000?
Essentially, this will deplete it. But it's there. It's there for that purpose. Right.
I concur with the Deputy Mayor's motion to take it out. I don't think it's fair to the residents to turn around after a budget has passed and put on another hike. At the same time, I think we've got to be cognizant of the fact of depleting reserves, and perhaps it's the friendly amendment that we would agree to replace that amount over the next 2 years, so that by the end of our term, we've put those reserves back into place.
Or you can get the mover and the supporter to include that.
Yes.
As such, and it would be done at that. Is that okay?
If I may, yes. Thank you very much, and thank you, Councillor Sutton. I meant to put that in there, and it just memory lapse.
Councilor Puget, you had your hand up.
So, just as a question, so then we didn't know this prior to budget deliberations, correct? And so this amount, it for what period of time are we talking about? Just for the, they appealed it from what date?
They appealed it for the period of 2003 up to the present.
Right.
So
okay.
Going back that far.
Oh, so it's a total amount from that?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion again is carried unanimously.
17.2, amendment to tax arrears extension agreement for 117 Fort Street.
Deputy Mayor Puget, or Councilor Puget.
Promotion.
Make sure you get his paycheck.
Yeah, right.
Okay. That a report by Paul Beneteau, Treasurer, dated March 6, 2012, regarding an amendment to the extension agreement between the Town of Amherstburg and the owner of 117 Fort Street be received. That the Mayor and Clerk be authorized to enter into the extension agreement between the Town and the property owner on behalf of the Town, with the terms outlined in the said agreement. And further, that bylaw 2012-19 be in a bylaw to authorize the execution of an agreement of an amendment to a tax arrears extension agreement pursuant to section 378 of the Municipal Act 2001 be taken as having been read three times and finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
Is there a supporter for that? Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor? Motion is carried.
That brings us to reports under clerks. Item 19.1, Fighting Island Amateur Boxing Club renewal of lease agreement.
Yep. Councillor DePasquale.
I move that the report prepared by Paul Parker, Deputy Clerk, dated February 24, 2012, regarding the Fighting Island Boxing Club renewal of lease agreement be received, and the council approve the execution of the lease agreement for an additional 12-month period and further the bylaw 2012-20 being a bylaw to authorize the approval of a lease agreement between the corporation town of Amherstburg Fighting Island Amateur Boxing Club be taken as having been read three times and finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
There's support for that motion. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Any discussions of council? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Item 19.2, committee vacancy, Amherstburg Accessibility Advisory Committee.
Council's pleasure relative to that report. And then, Councilor Puget.
That the report by Paula Parker, Deputy Clerk, dated March 8, 2012, regarding committee vacancy be received, that administration proceed to fill the member vacancy by advertising for applications in the local media and on the town website, and further that the committee identify suitable candidates from the applications for council consideration and appointment.
There is support for the concurrence of that recommendation. Councilor Sutton supports that motion. Discussions? All in favor? Motion is carried.
Item 19.3, Administrative Report, Ombudsman Investigation.
Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the report prepared by Brenda Percy, Clerk, dated March 9, 2012, regarding Administrative Report, Ombudsman Investigation be received. Above other, thanking Andre Marin, Ombudsman, for the report and advising that the town intends to implement the recommendations be sent, and further that administration be directed to prepare a policy on closed meeting procedures for council consideration.
There is support for that motion. Councilor Pilon supports that motion. Discussions, if any, at this time? Councilor Puget, followed by Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Through you to Brenda. Do you know how long it's going to take to prepare this policy?
I've drafted the policy already. It will be back. I can have it to next council meeting, but I won't be present, so we'll leave it to council whether or not it comes to that meeting or to the following one.
To make a comment, it's just that the Ombudsman had released a report, I believe it was the first week of January, and we're just getting to the thank you letter right now. It just seems like it's a long time. We did pass the motion, I believe it was the fourth Monday of January, so it has been almost 6 weeks before we got the letter sent to Mr. Marin.
That was January 23rd, and listen, council has dealt with it. The policy is in place. You're not going to be here at the next meeting. It's imperative that the clerk is present at the meeting when we deal with this, and so you're going to be back at not the next council meeting, the council thereafter. I think it would be prudent on the council part to ensure that the clerk is here when the policy is going to be dealt with at that time. Councilor Davis.
Just a suggestion, Mr. Mayor, could we forward the letter of thanks in the meantime, deal with the policy later, because we have an excellent draft here.
On the motion, Councilor Sutton.
I just want to thank administration. I know it took some time to go through the Ombudsman report and put it into a more readable form, and that's exactly what I was hoping for. The intention of this report was certainly not to supersede the Ombudsman's report, but I think in a more chronological order to outline to the public the exact nature of our discussions in camera, the opinion of the Ombudsman in terms of errors that were made, and then most importantly, the remedies that either have been or will be implemented to ensure that there won't be a reoccurrence. Unfortunately, sometimes things like that get misinterpreted, and people think and read into it all kinds of different suspicions and opinions. But when you get right down to it, I think, at least I've always been taught, when you make a mistake, you admit it publicly. You take a responsibility for that mistake. You don't look to point fingers or to lay blame, but rather you look for solutions. And you look to come up with remedies that are going to ensure that that mistake doesn't reoccur. And certainly I think the report does a great job of outlining in a very succinct form the errors that were made. And, you know, what we have here are a lot of cases where, you know, there were some, I guess, administrative errors in terms of wrong exemptions being cited, cases, especially when it came to training and education, where in the ombudsman's opinion, we went beyond the scope of what's allowed there. That's easy to happen. I think it's human nature when you're talking about, for example, zoning or backflow prevention, to revert to examples that you're familiar with. And I don't think there was an intent on any member of council on those questions to hijack the public process. It was, it just as the ombudsman stated, went beyond what should have been done behind closed doors. And the remedy is very simple, to ensure that things like that don't take place, and that except in the rare circumstance where maybe a solicitor's opinion is involved, that education and training be done in the public forum. But at the same time, let's not deny the fact that those mistakes were there. But I think that what we have to show is that we have a willingness to change and modify our practices to ensure that we are in compliance with the Act. And that really has to be our main concern. And hopefully that's what we all take away from the report this evening. And when Brenda's back in a month's time, we'll take a look at, not that you're going to be gone that entire time, you're just going to miss the next meeting, but then we can get to that policy.
Councilor Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also want to congratulate the clerk on an excellent summary, because I do think that when you look at the Ombudsman's recommendation procedures already implemented and procedures to be implemented, it's going to be an excellent teaching tool, not just for this particular council, but councils coming up. And I think you've been very articulate in very common language to be able to describe what you need to do and how you need to do it. And I think it makes it so much easier to understand, because it is very complex. You can be halfway through a sentence and say, okay, I can say this first part of the sentence, but I can't say that second part of the sentence because it would be inappropriate. So this has really helped outline the language that needs to be used in closed meetings and how to move comfortably forward into the open meeting. So I want to thank you for a very clear and succinct report.
I think that everyone should be clear on the issue here. And certainly it all depends on interpretation. And that's very important to understand here. And understanding, of course, to the public that there is nothing done there as it relates to contracts or RFPs or anything of that nature. So I don't want someone to try and read something in there that never took place. And that, in my estimation, is so very, very important. On the motion itself, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 20, consent reports. There's three reports before council.
It's council's pleasure relative to the consent reports. Councilor Pino.
I move the consent reports, items 1-3.
There is support for that motion. Councilor Sutton supports that motion. Discussions? Councilor Sutton, if you would, followed by Councilor Pusick.
Just a question on the MFIPA report. Do we have an idea in terms of the cost to the municipality for investigating those particular requests?
The cost associated depends. Each file is differently. It depends on the amount of time that staff spends, which I didn't track, and I'm starting to track. And the easily tracked costs are when we require legal consultation and assistance, and we can track that easier. There are costs under the Act that we can recoup from the requester, but not all costs.
I think the question I'm asking, it'd be nice if we could be in that mode to track the costs so we can report back to council. Exactly. The cost it takes for this, and of course, it certainly takes administration away from the jobs they would normally be doing, and that puts a backlog. Councilor Boucher.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. Through you to Brenda. I see that our request jumped from 3 in 2009 to 16 in 2011. And out of those 16, how many of them were denied? Like, I see that 6 of them went to appeals, And four of them went to the mediation stage, and then the other two went to the adjudication stage. But out of the 16, were just six denied, or were there all 16 denied?
Because when a request moves on to an appeal or mediation or adjudication stage, there could be several reasons why the individual appealed the response from the head. It doesn't mean that all their request was denied. It could mean that we had provided the document but redacted certain parts, blacked out certain parts, and that they wish to see those parts. It could be an appeal based on an extension of time that was required by staff to complete the request. It could be an appeal for fees that we charge. There's a number of reasons.
And I do understand that. But what I'm asking is, did just six of them, were just six of them denied and they decided to proceed with it? Or were 14 denied, or
Councilor, it doesn't say that. You start out with 16.
Yes,
and then
I know that.
When you go down to the number of requests to the adjudication stage, you end up with two. So when you total that up, there's a difference of six, and she wondered, are all of those been processed, or only those six been denied?
If I have 16 and six went to appeal, but then only four moved on to the mediation stage, it means that either the person who is appealing withdrew their appeal, or that the IPC made a decision at that time supporting the head's decision not to release or to release more. I don't have the exact details of each one of the 16. However, we do file a report annually with the IPC that sets out all that individual information.
Okay.
And I do understand that, but what my question is, of the 16, I know that six of those, they were very persistent. They wanted to find the answers. But did the other 10, were they given the information they wanted and that's why they didn't proceed with it?
It does not mean that they didn't receive the information and they were satisfied. It could mean that they received a part of the information, they are satisfied. It could mean any number of things.
But you get that information, you say, once a year and you make it available?
Once a year, we fill out a comprehensive report to the IPC and it details all that information.
Councilor DePasquale.
Yeah, I don't want to muddle the waters, but maybe I can help. You got a total of 16. Six of those 16, they were the ones that were appealed, right? Okay. So four of the six went to mediation.
And two.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the other two, they go to a higher level, they go to adjudication, and they're still part and parcel of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Councilor Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I thought it was a very interesting report, and I guess one of the things that I looked at was that in 2009 you had three requests, and it more than doubled in by 2010, and by 2011 you're getting quadruple that. You're getting double that in 2010. So that's a high ratio. That's not only a number of requests that are being asked for, but that's an awful lot of administrative time that's going into it. A couple of questions arise. One is, it would be interesting to know if we can target why that is happening, and is there anything that we can do in relationship to, is it a trend? Is everybody finding this is a good thing to be doing or needing to do? Or is it something that's changed that we could look at to do more preventive work so that there isn't the need to request them? So it's just a kind of a numbers thing. Why is it doubled in 1 year? Because that suggests that it might double again in another year. The other thing I found was interesting is that that in 2012, five requests have been received, and that is quadruple that in last year. So it's gone up five times as well. So there's something going on, and I think it would be of value to just kind of look at why is this happening, and it's just kind of like a demographic thing, what's going on. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to do. The other thing that in your report, and I thought it was an excellent report, is that a lot of times you have to consult with the legal person to see whether, you know, whether it's on or off. And I know you've been quite clear, you are not a lawyer, you are not, that's not your role, but you are within your skill sets, you can distinguish these things. But I'm just wondering, the costs of the legal fees for this particular procedure, especially since we've at least doubled the request from last year, and what the costs of legal fees are just in that role alone, never mind in some other ones, and to look at whether or not a legal person might be a better person to do that, which would free up administrative times to do more direct administration. So it's just a thought, since we are using legal, and I know a lot of communities in this area do have their own legal consultation. So I thought, boy, that can be another added expense that we could possibly address. So the two, why is it increasing, and would it be more efficient to have a person with more legal skills to be addressing the whole problem?
On the motion, no further discussion, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Item 21, consent correspondence. There's five items before council.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the correspondence 1 through 5 be received.
There is support for that. Councillor Pinon supports that motion. Discussions? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Councillor Gately Reagan.
Consent other minutes, 2 minutes before council.
With council's pleasure, Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mayor. Move the minutes as listed in items 1 and 2 be received.
Motion to receive those particular minutes, supported by Councillor Pinon. Discussion on those minutes? No concerns? All in favor? Motion is carried.
Correspondence 23.1, St. John the Baptist Church, Good Friday walk.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you. Move that the correspondence from St. John the Baptist Church regarding Good Friday walk be received, and further that council support the request for police escort on April 6, 2012 at 10:30 a.m. for the Good Friday walk.
There is support for that. Councillor Pouget supports that motion. Further discussions? There is none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 23.2, House of Shalom, Youth Centers Canada, letter of support.
That the correspondence from House of Shalom Youth Centers Canada be received, and further that administration prepare a letter of support for sustainable funding for all the youth centers throughout the province, and that the letter be sent to Eric Hopkins, Minister of Children and Youth Services.
There is support for that. Councillor Davies supports that motion. Discussions, if any? Councillor Davies.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Since this is an important issue, and especially with the current health issues occurring recently, I would like the opposition shadow ministers to also receive a copy, if you don't mind. So to the Conservative and to the Democratic Party.
Okay. Is that okay with the movement?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Further discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 23.3, the Ontario horse racing industry.
With council's pleasure, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the recommendation that the correspondence from the Ontario Horse Racing Association be received, and further the council support the resolution by the town of Fort Erie regarding petitioning the province of Ontario to maintain its support and commitment to the horse racing industry in Ontario.
There is support for that. Councillor Pinon supports that motion. Further discussions? Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We received a further article from the county. Are we going to deal with that next, or is that going to be part? Can we deal with it now?
This is the same thing? Exactly.
Thank you very kindly.
On the motion.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
In the resolution that we passed at County Council, it says that further that the County of Essex local member municipalities are encouraged to enact similar resolutions to express their support for Ontario's horse racing and breeding industries in writing to the Premier to preserve and enhance the live racing industry in Ontario. And if you would waive the rules of order, I'm prepared to make that recommendation right now.
Yeah, and that, you just add that to that motion because that's part, that should be part of it.
All right, may I just read what I have here? I move that we demand the province of Ontario undertake an operational review of its offices and ministries with the potential of relocating them to the more affordable communities across the province of Ontario and reverse their decision to divert funding away from Ontario's horse raising industry at the expense of communities such as Windsor and Essex County, as well as plans to construct a Toronto casino at the expense specifically of Windsor and Niagara Falls. Furthermore, that this resolution be sent to the attention of the Premier and the leaders of the opposition, as well as AMO and all other affected Essex County municipalities for the support of this.
Councillor Davie, followed by Councillor Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to speak to this as well. I'm really very disturbed by this particular decision by the provincial government. And the two issues are that one are the slots and the other is the horse racing industry. In relationship to the slots, it's believed that it makes quite a profit. And the OLG haven't released the numbers, but we do know that the slots turn a profit. In relationship to a good business decision, it doesn't make sense that the Ontario government would shut down a part of our community's gaming industry that's making money only because the Windsor Casino isn't doing quite as well. And I say that because they are two different groups that use that. The Casino Windsor is very much encourage our visitors from the United States and from other parts of Ontario who come for vacation and want to spend that. Whereas the racetrack slots are more for local families. Like I know a lot of women and their mothers go there on a regular basis. It's not crowded. It's easier to walk around, especially for some of the older folks. It's easy for folks getting off work just to pop in for an hour or so on their way home from work, and it's a different demographic that uses. I think that it's a disconcerting that the ministry is making this decision. If the casino is losing money, it doesn't affect the it shouldn't be affecting the slots, because the second issue is the racetrack, and it tries to have it will be at risk if the slots go down. They try to have more, as far as the raceway goes, they try to have more race days than any other area, and their purses may be smaller, but they try to provide a viable venue for horsemen. And the other offshoot is that the horsemen, or the folks who bring their horses to race there, spend over $200,000 a year on feed, and most of that comes from local farmers, and that sustains them as well. So I think this is a critical issue for our Essex farmers and our Essex horsemen.
Thank you. Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. I support the motion, and Councillor Davies has stated all my concerns. Thank you.
Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And it's regarding I agree with everything Councillor Davies has said, and further to that, to the closure of the Windsor slots and the jobs lost for all of the benefit of Toronto. The recent decision by the Liberal Party of Ontario is a deliberate attempt to lay the groundwork, in my estimation, for a proposed new city for the City of Toronto. And a new casino for the benefit of Toronto comes at the expense of jobs at Windsor Raceway and other race facilities across Ontario. The next wave of economic devastation will come with the opening of a Toronto casino, which will have a direct impact on casinos in Windsor and Niagara Falls, as the market is currently saturated with Ontario and U.S.-based casinos, specifically Ohio and Detroit. Once again, rural and small-town Ontario will be sacrificed financially in support of an inefficient and overly expensive and expansive municipal government known as the City of Toronto. It's time to level the playing field and call for a complete review of all the Ontario government's operations, and look at the feasibility of relocating provincial offices and ministries out of Toronto and into more affordable communities such as Windsor, Essex County, London, Kitchener, etc.
I think this motion has been, we've dealt with this at the county level at our last county meeting. And certainly what we were looking at, of course, and the purpose there with the delegation that appeared before us was to ensure that maintaining the rural economy, that's what this is truly about. It's the maintaining and enhancing the live horse racing. And when you look at those individuals in the rural community, then, and as has been stated, you look at live horse racing being impacted here. We have several farmers in our area, for example, that provide straw, provide hay, and that's going to hit this particular region in a variety of ways. So if you look at the contribution that are given to the economy from the horse racing, and when you look at the job creation because of that, and understand there are people that work in that particular industry that are trained for that, and so once that is no longer there, then they are have to be placed back into the workforce somewhere, and it's going to take an extension of benefits. It's going to take retraining in that if we are successful in getting them back there. And so we don't want to lose sight of the fact, the importance of this particular job in our rural community. And that's the strategy and the vision of the Sandinski report back in July of 2005. Because it was through that report that they realized that the funding through the slots was going to be the catalyst to keep live horse racing going. And so with the absence of that, and the government, the provincial government is talking about that, I believe it is in April the 31st of next year, that's going to be the death knell of live horse racing. And so we're hoping that the principals can get together, and certainly in my estimation, it's like motherhood and apple pie. We have to sit down at the table and come up with an agreement that's going to help further horse racing in our area and throughout the province of Ontario.
Exactly.
So on that particular motion, all in favor? Opposed? The motion is carried.
That brings us to unfinished business.
Unfinished business? Councillor Pino.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I had brought it up one other time, and what I'd like to, if administration could number our reports on the stick we get here, you know. There's no numbers. Like, sometimes these things kind of go slow, and I got to catch up. It'd be easier if they were numbered rather than just a book beside it. You know what I'm saying, on the side?
Take your recommendation under advisement.
No, Brenda knows what I mean. Okay, thank you.
Unfinished business. Still, Councillor Cruzier.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At our last meeting, we talked about the truck routes, and I just wondered if that could stay under unfinished business until we get a report back.
Certainly. Still on unfinished business? Well, let me just raise one thing that at some point, and I say this very seriously, I have received a lot of calls, a lot of complaints with respect to the drop-off at the public works. This is the level of service that the people in Amherstburg have come to expect, enjoy, and deserve. Now, this level of service has been taken away for the obvious reason. The problem, I'd like to find out, Lou, what's the results we're experiencing with drop-off being taken there. People are saying they're still going to drop it off there. There are individuals that are saying, look, you've introduced what we call pride and ownership in the town of Amherstburg. We love to keep our places looking nice, but to do that, we don't want to keep our yard, garden waste and our tree clippings, our grass clippings, our leaves, and of course our tree branches in our yard. We want a place to drop it off. We don't want to send anything there that shouldn't be there, but it's causing us some serious concerns. And so that was my concern last year when we came forward with this. That is my concern again. And certainly the people that I've received calls from are very concerned about that fact. Councilor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the lead into that. Certainly, I've received a number of calls as well. And I'm just wondering, If, and I realize it's a separate budget, is it not, through you, Mr. Mayor, it's a separate budget than our new garbage pickup service, correct? The drop-off in the yard is a separate budget. And I'm just wondering if we could just have a little bit of a task force or a brainstorm to see whether or not there's something that we could do to not only at least continue a chunk of it, and people are saying they want more time, not less, but that we might be able to make it a money maker. Is there a way, I mean, as far as shredding and composting and selling back to the community to revenue generate? And I know there's challenges, but we're going to have a nice new paved area, so I don't know whether or not it's something we can look into. Again, I remember Halifax, and I know it's a bigger town, but they did have their own composting, and I realize the waste management folks do that. But is there a way that we might be? Because it is. I mean, I load half a truckload every weekend with it, and I can't see it sitting around my yard for 2 weeks, but I'll figure out something if I have to. But I really do think that it may give us an opportunity to brainstorm a new way of looking at how we could solve a problem that a lot of people really count on to keep our properties beautified.
I think one of the things perhaps I failed to mention is simply the fact there are ways that you can compost through grass clipping leaves, and you add to that, and you can end up with what we call the black gold, and can sell it back to the residents. There are ways to do that, and while those ways are being done, and we've got plenty of property over on Thomas Road, we've got property over on Walsh Road for that matter, but I think there's something there that we should be looking at, because one of the things we have to understand here, that is a level of service, and it's a level of service that people have come to enjoy. And it's a benefit that we have people in our community that are utilizing that level of service. And there's an old adage, people do not mind the price if they can see the prize. And they see the prize in that regard. Councillor Sutton.
I too have received a lot of input from residents regarding that. The one thing I've tried to express to them is that, certainly it's a pilot project. It's based upon their wishes in terms of what we do long term. And at the same time, I think we're adding a level of service by providing the roadside pickup for our seniors who are unable to access the drop-off. And I think what we can do is look for the best of both worlds scenario where we can keep the drop-off open, as per usual, and still continue that roadside pickup for our seniors who are unable to utilize that, and then it becomes a win-win for both. But I think in order to be correct, we have to have a motion to reconsider, and then but we have already passed to adopt that new those new hours, so I think we've got to reconsider that.
Thank you.
I too am in the same predicament. There are a number of residents, even residents out in the rural area. They got used to taking their brush and stuff to the yard. But I wondered if, do we need a motion to reconsider? If Lou could bring us a report back?
Sure.
A report back in due time to, so we can evaluate it and then move on from there?
I'm sorry,
I think we have a year before it is implemented, do we not? There's a period of time before we change those hours to the yard, or do we not?
No.
Because in that report, I would really like to see an opportunity to look at alternative ways of using that to our benefit and to be profit sharing.
I think what we can do, and I think, Lou, you've heard what has been put forward here, maybe you can take that away and then at our next meeting come back and see exactly what the impact would be before we do anything, okay, on the agreement. Okay. Councilor Puja.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I think we've all received a number of concerns, and quite a few of mine, although they were concerned about the drop-off, they were prepared to wait and see how it was going to go, and some were very grateful that we would have curbside every 2 weeks. But I'm just wondering if we just had an additional, maybe a half a day on a Saturday from 12 till 5 or whatever, if that would be a big increase, or if we could handle that.
I think you'll take all that back and we'll come back to it. Okay. Still under unfinished business? New business? Report.
Full business? Sorry, I apologize. I got carried away with the pickup. No pun intended. The property around the solar area on the north side road. When should we start to see the landscaping taking place that they promised us? It was supposed to have been last year, and then in the fall, and then it was really wet, so they couldn't do it. This is perfect growing season, and I'm hoping that we can encourage them as soon as possible to start getting some of the planting in so that it starts to change its appearance.
Certainly. There's no more unfinished business, new business?
No.
No new business?
Report from in-camera session. Council met in closed session under exemption 239(2)(b) of the Municipal Act to conduct interviews for the acting CAO position. Council directed administration to negotiate an employment contract with the preferred candidates. There's nothing further to report on this.
Next item.
That brings us to notices of motion. We dealt with Councillor Sutton's notice of motion previously, so that would be any new notices of motion at this time.
Councillor DePasquale, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a notice of motion. I'll read it out to you. Whereas the governance of the council and of any municipality are exercised on behalf of its residents who elected them, and whereas members of council are chosen either on an at-large election or by ward election, when councillors are elected at large, voters choose their favorite candidate from a large list of all those running for council. In a ward system, voters will choose their favorite candidates from a list in each ward that is created. And whereas an election by ward system is often favored when a municipality such as Amherstburg, which has a diverse mix of interests, as a result of its distinct urban and rural areas, an election by ward system can better assure representation by council in all the districts. The primary purpose for the establishment of wards is to attempt to ensure that the democratic principle of fair public representation is achieved during municipal elections and the subsequent governance of the municipality by council. Therefore, I cause to be moved that council direct administration investigate the forming of a ward system for the town of Amherstburg and obtain guidance and comments from the Ministry of Municipal Affairs regarding this process. That at least 3 public meetings be held in an effort to obtain public input from all residents, and that a final report with recommendations be brought back to council in a timely fashion for a final decision and ready for the election.
Make that available? Okay. That's a notice of motion. Still notice of motion?
I regret some new business I forgot to bring up, but just to you, to Lulu. I just got noticed tonight that there were some of the street lights were out in the Balaclava and Richmond and George area. So do you have somebody look at those, please?
Mr. Mayor, over the weekend we've had quite an occurrence of unusual activity. There's been quite a few occurrences this morning that were reported of outages. Essex Power was notified right away, and they're I believe that they've attended to most of them, but we'll continue to look at it.
There's some chicanery going on in Dale. You have to deal with it. Okay. That brings us to bylaws. Confirmatory bylaw.
Bylaw to confirm the resolutions held on March 19th.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move bylaw 2012-23 being a bylaw to confirm all resolutions of the Municipal Council meeting held on March 19th, 2012. Be read 3 times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
There's support for that motion. Councilor Cloutier supports that motion. Discussions, if any? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried. Next item on the agenda.
Move to adjourn.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland makes the motion to adjourn. Is there support for that motion? Councilor DePasquale, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried. Thank you. Have a safe trip.
Thank you.